Chapter 32. Four Kings in Shadow. The village was bigger than most, but still a scruffy town to bear a name like Four Kings. As usual, the Camlin Road ran straight through the center of the town, but another heavily traveled highway came in from the south, too. Most villages were markets and gathering places for the farmers of the area, but there were few farmers to be seen here. Four Kings survived as a stopover for merchants' wagon trains on their way to Camlin and to the mining towns in the Mountains of Mist beyond Bearlon, as well as the villages between. The southern road carried Lugard's trade with the mines in the west. Lugarder merchants going to Camlin had a more direct route. The surrounding country held few farms, barely enough to feed themselves and the town, and everything in the village centered on the merchants and their wagons, the men who drove them and the laborers who loaded the goods. Plots of bare earth, ground to dust, lay scattered through Four Kings, filled with wagons parked wheel to wheel and abandoned except for a few bored guards. Stables and horse lots lined the streets, all of which were wide enough to allow wagons to pass, and deeply rutted from too many wheels. There was no village green, and the children played in the ruts, dodging wagons and the curses of wagon drivers. Village women, their heads covered with scarves, kept their eyes down and walked quickly, sometimes followed by wagoneers' comments that made Rand blush. Even Matt gave a start at some of them. No woman stood gossiping over the fence with a neighbor. Drab wooden houses stood cheek by jowl, with only narrow alleys between, and whitewash, where anyone had bothered to whitewash the weathered boards, faded as if it had not been freshened in years. Heavy shutters on the houses had not been open in so long that the hinges were solid lumps of rust. Noise hung over everything, clanging from blacksmiths, shouts from the wagon drivers, raucous laughter from the town's inns. Rand swung down from the back of a merchant's canvas-topped wagon as they came abreast of a garishly painted inn, all greens and yellows that caught the eye from afar among the leaden houses. The line of wagons kept moving. None of the drivers even seemed to notice that he and Matt had gone. Dusk was falling, and they all had their eyes on unhitching the horses and reaching the inns. Rand stumbled in a rut, then leaped quickly to avoid a heavy-laden wagon, clattering the other way. The driver shouted a curse at him as the wagon rolled by. A village woman stepped around him and hurried on without ever meeting his eye. "I don't know about this place," he said. He thought he could hear music mixed in the din, but he could not tell from where it was coming. From the inn, maybe, but it was hard to be sure. "I don't like it. Maybe we'd better go on this time." Matt gave him a scornful look, then rolled his eyes at the sky. Dark clouds thickened overhead. "And sleep under a hedge tonight? In that? I'm used to a bed again." He cocked his head to listen, then grunted. "Maybe one of these places doesn't have musicians. Anyway, I'll bet they don't have a juggler." He slung his bow across his shoulders and started for the bright yellow door, studying everything through narrowed eyes. Rand followed doubtfully. There were musicians inside, their zither and drum almost drowned in coarse laughter and drunken shouting. Rand did not bother to find the landlord. The next two inns had musicians as well, and the same deafening cacophony. Roughly dressed men filled the tables and stumbled across the floor, waving mugs and trying to fondle serving maids who dodged with fixed, long-suffering smiles. The building shook with the racket, and the smell was sour, a stench of old wine and unwashed bodies. Of the merchants, in their silk and velvet and lace, there was no sign. Private dining rooms above stairs protected their ears and noses. He and Matt only put their heads in the doors before leaving. He was beginning to think they would have no choice but to move on. The fourth inn, the Dancing Cartman, stood silent. It was as gaudy as the other inns, yellow-trimmed in bright red and bilious, eye-wrenching green, though here the paint was cracked and peeling. Rand and Matt stepped inside. Only half a dozen men sat at the tables that filled the common room, hunched over their mugs, each one glumly alone with his thoughts. Business was definitely not good, but it had been better once. Exactly as many serving maids as there were patrons busied themselves around the room. There was plenty for them to do. Dirt crusted the floor and cobwebs filled the corners of the ceiling, but most were not doing anything really useful, only moving so they would not be seen standing still. A bony man with long stringy hair to his shoulders turned to scowl at them as they came through the door. The first slow peal of thunder rumbled across Four Kings. "What do you want?" He was rubbing his hands on a greasy apron that hung to his ankles. Rand wondered if more grime was coming off on the apron or on the man's hands. He was the first skinny innkeeper Rand had seen. "Well, speak up. Buy a drink or get out. Do I look like a rary show?" Flushing, Rand launched into the spiel he had perfected at inns before this. "I play the flute and my friend juggles, and you'll not see two better in a year. For a good room and a good meal, we'll fill this common room of yours." He remembered the filled common rooms he had already seen that evening, especially the man who had vomited right in front of him at the last one. He'd had to step lively to keep his boots untouched. He faltered, but caught himself and went on. "We'll fill your inn with men who will repay the little we cost 20 times over with the food and drink they buy. Why should—"
"I've got a man plays the dulcimer," the innkeeper said sourly.
"You have a drunk, Samuel Hick," one of the serving maids said.
She was passing him with a tray and 2 mugs, and she paused to give Rand and Matt a plump smile.
"Most times, he can't see well enough to find the common room," she confided in a loud whisper. "Haven't even seen him in 2 days.
Without taking his eyes off Rand and Matt, Hick casually backhanded her across the face. She gave a surprised grunt and fell heavily to the unwashed floor. One of the mugs broke, and the spilled wine washed rivulets in the dirt.
"You're docked for the wine and breakage. Get him fresh drinks, and hurry. Men don't pay to wait while you laze around."
His tone was as offhand as the blow. None of the patrons looked up from their wine, and the other serving maids kept their eyes averted. The plump woman rubbed her cheek and stared pure murder at Hake, but she gathered the empty mug and the broken pieces on her tray and went off without a word. Hake sucked his teeth thoughtfully, eyeing Rand and Matt. His gaze clung to the Heron-marked sword before he pulled it away.
"Tell you what," he said finally. "You can have a couple of pallets in an empty storeroom in the back. Rooms are too expensive to give away. You eat when everybody's gone. There ought to be something left."
Rand wished there was an inn in Four Kings they had not yet tried. Since leaving Whitebridge, he had met coolness, indifference, and outright hostility, but nothing that gave him the sense of unease that this man and this village did. He told himself it was just the dirt and squalor and noise, but the misgivings did not go away. Matt was watching Hake as if he suspected some trap, but he gave no sign of wanting to give up the dancing cartman for a bed under a hedge. Thunder rattled the windows. Rand sighed. "The pallets will do if they're clean, and if there are enough clean blankets. But we eat 2 hours after full dark, no later, and the best you have. Here, we'll show you what we can do." He reached for the flute case, but Hake shook his head.
"Don't matter. This lot'll be satisfied with any kind of screeching, so long as it sounds something like music."
His eyes touched Rand's sword again. His thin smile touched nothing but his lips.
"Eat when you want, but if you don't bring the crowd in, out you go in the street."
He nodded over his shoulder at 2 hard-faced men sitting against the wall. They were not drinking, and their arms were thick enough for legs. When Hake nodded at them, their eyes shifted to Rand and Matt, flat and expressionless. Rand put one hand on his sword hilt, hoping the twisting in his stomach did not show on his face.
"As long as we get what's agreed on," he said in a level tone.
Hake blinked, and for a moment he seemed uneasy himself. Abruptly, he nodded.
"What I said, isn't it? Well, get started. You won't bring anybody in just standing there."
He stalked off, scowling and shouting at the serving maids as if there were 50 customers they were neglecting. There was a small raised platform at the far end of the room, near the door to the back. Rand lifted a bench up on it and settled his cloak, blanket roll, and Tom's bundled cloak behind the bench with the sword lying atop them. He wondered if he had been wise to keep wearing the sword openly. Swords were common enough, but the Heron mark attracted attention and speculation. Not from everybody, but any notice at all made him uncomfortable. He could be leaving a clear trail for the Murdral, if Fades needed that kind of trail. They did not seem to. In any case, he was reluctant to stop wearing it. Tam had given it to him, his father. As long as he wore the sword, there was still some connection between Tam and him, a thread that gave him the right to still call Tam father.
Too late now, he thought. He was not sure what he meant, but he was sure it was true. Too late.
At the first note of Cock of the North, the half-dozen patrons in the common room lifted their heads out of their wine. Even the two bouncers sat forward a little. They all applauded when he finished, including the two toughs, and once more when Matt sent a shower of colored balls spinning through his hands. Outside, the sky muttered again. The rain was holding off, but the pressure of it was palpable. The longer it waited, the harder it would fall. Word spread, and by the time it was dark outside, the inn was packed full, with men laughing and talking so loud that Rand could barely hear what he was playing. Only the thunder overpowered the noise in the common room. Lightning flashed in the windows, and in the momentary lulls, he could faintly hear rain drumming on the roof. Men who came in now dripped trails across the floor. Whenever he paused, voices shouted the names of tunes through the din. A good many names he did not recognize, though when he got someone to hum a bit of it, he often found he did know the song. It had been that way other places before. Jolly Jam was Rhea's fling here, and had been Colors of the Sun at an earlier stop. Some names stayed the same, others changed with 10 miles distance, and he had learned new songs, too. The Drunken Peddler was a new one, though sometimes it was called Tinker in the Kitchen. Two Kings Came Hunting was Two Horses Running, and several other names besides. He played the ones he knew, and men pounded the tables for more. Others called for Matt to juggle again. Sometimes fights broke out between those wanting music and those who fancied juggling. Once a knife flashed, and a woman screamed, and a man reeled back from a table with blood streaming down his face. But Jack and Strom, the two bouncers, closed in swiftly, and with complete impartiality, threw everyone involved into the street with lumps on their heads. That was their tactic with any trouble. The talk and the laughing went on as if nothing had occurred. Nobody even looked around except those the bouncers jostled on their way to the door. The patrons were free with their hands, too, when one of the serving maids let herself grow unwary. More than once, Jack or Strom had to rescue one of the women, though they were none too quick about it. The way Hake carried on, screaming and shaking the woman involved, he always considered it her fault, and the teary eyes and stammered apologies said she was willing to accept his opinion. The women jumped whenever Hake frowned, even if he was looking somewhere else. Rand wondered why any of them put up with it. Hake smiled when he looked at Rand and Matt. After a while, Rand realized Hake was not smiling at them. The smiles came when his eyes slid behind them, to where the Heron Mark sword lay. Once, when Rand set the gold and silver-chased flute down beside his stool, the flute got a smile, too. The next time he changed places with Matt at the front of the dais, he leaned over to speak in Matt's ear. Even that close, he had to speak loudly, but with all the noise, he doubted if anyone else could hear.
Hake's going to try to rob us.
Matt nodded as if it was nothing he had not expected.
We'll have to bar our door tonight. Bar our door? Jack and Strom could break down a door with their fists. Let's get out of here. Wait till after we eat, at least. I'm hungry. They can't do anything here, Matt added.
The packed common room shouted impatiently for them to get on with it. Hake was glaring at them.
Anyway, you want to sleep outside tonight?
An especially strong crack of lightning drowned out everything else, and for an instant, the light through the windows was stronger than the lamps.
I just want to get out without my head being broken, Rand said,
but Matt was already slouching back to take his rest on the stool. Rand sighed and launched into The Road to Dunaran. A lot of them seemed to like that one. He had already played it 4 times, and they still shouted for it. The trouble was, Matt was right, as far as he went. He was hungry, too, and he could not see how Hake would give them any trouble while the common room was full and getting fuller. For every man who left or was thrown out by Jack and Strom, 2 came in from the street. They shouted for the juggling or for a particular tune, but mostly they were interested in drinking and fondling the serving maids. One man was different, though. He stood out in every way among the crowd and the dancing cartmen. Merchants apparently had no use for the rundown inn. There were not even any private dining rooms for them, as far as he could make out. The patrons were all rough-dressed, with the tough skin of men who labored in the sun and wind. This man was
sleekly fleshy, with a soft look to his hands, and a velvet coat and a dark green velvet cloak lined with blue silk was slung around his shoulders. All of his clothes had an expensive cut to them. His shoes, soft velvet slippers, not boots, were not made for the rutted streets of Four Kings, or for any streets at all, for that matter. He came in well after dark, shaking the rain off his cloak as he looked around, a twist of distaste on his mouth. He scanned the room once, already turning to go, then suddenly gave a start at nothing Rand could see and sat down at a table Jack and Strom had just emptied. A serving maid stopped at his table, then brought him a mug of wine which he pushed to one side and never touched again. She seemed in a hurry to leave his table both times, though he did not try to touch her or even look at her. Whatever it was about him that made her uneasy, others who came close to him noticed it too. For all of his soft look, whenever some callous-handed wagon driver decided to share his table, one glance was all it took to send the man looking elsewhere. He sat as if there were no one else in the room but him, and Rand and Matt. Them he watched over steepled hands that glittered with a ring on each finger. He watched them with a smile of satisfied recognition. Rand murmured to Matt as they were changing places again, and Matt nodded.
"I saw him," he muttered. "Who is he? I keep thinking I know him."
The same thought had occurred to Rand, tickling the back of his memory, but he could not bring it forward. Yet he was sure that face was one he had never seen before. When they had been performing for 2 hours, as near as Rand could estimate, he slipped the flute into its case, and he and Matt gathered up their belongings. As they were stepping down from the low platform, Hake came bustling up, anger twisting his narrow face.
"It's time to eat," Rand said to forestall him,
"and we don't want our things stolen. You want to tell the cook?" Hake hesitated, still angry, trying unsuccessfully to keep his eyes off what Rand held in his arms. Casually, Rand shifted his bundles so he could rest one hand on the sword.
"Or you can try throwing us out."
He made the emphasis deliberately, then added, "There's a lot of night left for us to play yet. We have to keep our strength up if we're going to perform well enough to keep this crowd spending money. How long do you think this room will stay full if we fall over from hunger?" Hake's eyes twitched over the room full of men putting money in his pocket. Then he turned and stuck his head through the door to the rear of the inn.
"Feed 'em," he shouted.
Rounding on Rand and Matt, he snarled,
"Don't be all night about it. I expect you up there till the last man's gone."
Some of the patrons were shouting for the musician and the juggler, and Hake turned to soothe them. The man in the velvet cloak was one of the anxious ones. Rand motioned to Matt to follow him. A stout door separated the kitchen from the front of the inn, and, except when it opened to let a serving maid through, the rain pounding the roof was louder in the kitchen than the shouts from the common room. It was a big room, hot and steamy from stoves and ovens, with a huge table covered with half-prepared food and dishes ready to be served. Some of the serving maids sat clustered on a bench near the rear door, rubbing their feet and chattering away all at once with the fat cook, who talked back at the same time and waved a big spoon to emphasize her points. They all glanced up as Rand and Matt came in, but it did not slow their conversation or stop their foot rubbing.
"We ought to get out of here while we have the chance,"
Rand said softly, but Matt shook his head, his eyes fixed on the two plates the cook was filling with beef and potatoes and peas. She hardly looked at the two of them, keeping up her talk with the other women while she pushed things aside on the table with her elbows and set the plates down, adding forks.
"After we eat is time enough."
Matt slid onto a bench and began using his fork as if it were a shovel. Rand sighed, but he was right behind Matt. He had had only a butt end of bread to eat since the night before. His belly felt as empty as a beggar's purse, and the cooking smells that filled the kitchen did not help. He quickly had his mouth full, though Matt was getting his plate refilled by the cook before he had finished half of his. He did not mean to eavesdrop on the women's talk, but some of the words reached out and grabbed him.
"Sounds crazy to me."
"Crazy or not, it's what I hear.
He went to half the inns in town before he came here. Just walked in, looked around, and walked out without saying one word, even at the Royal Inn. Like it wasn't raining at all."
"Maybe he thought here was the most comfortable."
That brought gales of laughter.
"What I hear is, he didn't even get to Four Kings till after nightfall, and his horse is blowing like they've been pushed hard."
"Where'd he come from to get caught out after dark? Nobody but a fool or a madman travels anywhere and plans it that badly.
Well, maybe he's a fool, but he's a rich one. I hear he even has another carriage for his servants and baggage. There's money there, mark my words. Did you see that cloak of his? I wouldn't mind having that my own self. He's a little plump for my taste. But I always say a man can't be too fat if enough gold comes with it.
They all doubled over giggling, and the cook threw back her head and roared with laughter. Rand dropped his fork on his plate. A thought he did not like bubbled in his head. I'll be back in a minute, he said. Matt barely nodded, stuffing a piece of potato into his mouth. Rand picked up his sword belt along with his cloak as he stood, and buckled it around his waist on the way to the back door. No one paid him any mind. The rain was bucketing down. He swung his cloak around his shoulders and pulled the hood over his head, holding the cloak closed as he trotted across the stable yard. A curtain of water hid everything except when lightning flashed, but he found what he was hunting. The horses had been taken into the stable, but the two black lacquered carriages glistened wetly outside. Thunder grumbled, and a bolt of lightning streaked above the inn. In the brief burst of light, he made out a name in gold script on the coach doors. Howell Goad. Unmindful of the rain beating at him, he stood staring at the name he could no longer see. He remembered where he had last seen black lacquered coaches with their owners' names on the door, and sleek, overfed men in silk-lined velvet cloaks and velvet slippers. Whitebridge. A Whitebridge merchant could have a perfectly legitimate reason to be on his way to Camelin. A reason that sends him to half the inns in town before he chooses the one where you are. A reason that makes him look at you as if he's found what he's searching for. Rand shivered, and suddenly he was aware of rain trickling down his back. His cloak was tightly woven, but it had never been meant to stand up to this kind of downpour. He hurried back to the inn, splashing through deepening puddles. Jack blocked the door as he started through.
Well, well, well. Out here alone in the dark. Dark's dangerous, boy.
Rain slicked Rand's hair down across his forehead. The stable yard was empty except for them. He wondered if Hake had decided he wanted the sword and the flute badly enough to forego keeping the crowd in the common room. Brushing water out of his eyes with one hand, he put the other on his sword. Even wet, the knobby leather made a sure grip for his fingers.
Has Hake decided all those men will stay just for his ale instead of going where there's entertainment, too? If he has, we'll call the meal even for what we've done so far and be on our way.
Dry in the doorway, the big man looked out at the rain and snorted.
In this?
His eyes slid down to Rand's hand on the sword.
You know, me and Strom got a bet. He figures you stole that from your old grandmother. Me? I figure your grandmother'd kick you around the pig pen and hang you out to dry.
He grinned. His teeth were crooked and yellow, and the grin made him look even meaner.
Night's long yet, boy.
Rand brushed past him, and Jack led him by with an ugly chuckle. Inside, he tossed off his cloak and dropped on the bench at the table he had left only minutes before. Matt was done with his second plate and working on a third, eating more slowly now, but intently, as if he planned to finish every bite if it killed him. Jack took up a place by the door to the stable yard, leaning against the wall and watching them. Even the cook seemed to feel no urge to talk with him there.
He's from Whitebridge, Rand said softly.
There was no need to say who he was. Matt's head swiveled toward him, a piece of beef on the end of the fork suspended halfway to his mouth. Conscious of Jack watching, Rand stirred the food on his plate. He could not have gotten a mouthful down if he had been starving, but he tried to pretend an interest in the peas as he told Matt about the carriages and what the women had said in case Matt had not been listening. Obviously, he had not been. Matt blinked in surprise and whistled between his teeth, then frowned at the meat on his fork and grunted as he tossed the fork onto his plate. Rand wished he would make at least an effort to be circumspect.
After us, Matt said when he finished.
The creases in Matt's forehead deepened.
A dark friend?
Maybe, I don't know. Rand glanced at Jack and the big man stretched elaborately, shrugging shoulders as big as any blacksmith's.
You think we can get past him? Now without him making enough noise to bring Hake and the other one. I knew we should never have stopped here.
Rand gaped, but before he could say anything, Hake pushed through the door from the common room. Strom bulked large over his shoulder. Jack stepped in front of the back door.
"You going to eat all night?" Hake barked. "I didn't feed you so you could lie around out here."
Rand looked at his friend. Later, Matt mouthed, and they gathered their things under the watchful eyes of Hake, Strom, and Jack. In the common room, cries for juggling and the names of tunes burst through the clamor as soon as Rand and Matt appeared. The man in the velvet cloak, Howell Goad, still appeared to ignore everyone around him, but he was nonetheless seated on the edge of his chair. At the sight of them, he leaned back, the satisfied smile returning to his lips. Rand took the first turn at the front of the dais, playing drawing water from the well, with only half his mind on it. No one seemed to notice the few wrong notes. He tried to think of how they were going to get away and tried to avoid looking at Goad, too. If he was after them, there was no point in letting him know they knew it. As for getting away, he had never realized before what a good trap an inn made. Hake, Jack, and Strom did not even have to keep a close eye on them. The crowd would let them know if he or Matt left the dais. As long as the common room was full of people, Hake could not send Jack and Strom after them, but as long as the common room was full of people, they could not get away without Hake knowing. And Goad was watching their every move, too. It was so funny he would have laughed if he had not been on the point of throwing up. They would just have to be wary and wait their chance. When he changed places with Matt, Rand groaned to himself. Matt glared at Hake, at Strom, at Jack, without a care to whether they noticed or wondered why. When he was not actually handling the balls, his hand rested under his coat. Rand hissed at him, but he paid no attention. If Hake saw that ruby, he might not wait until they were alone. If the men in the common room saw it, half of them might join in with Hake. Worst of all, Matt stared at the Whitebridge merchant, the dark friend, twice as hard as at anyone else, and Goad noticed. There was no way he could avoid noticing. But it did not disturb his aplomb in the least. His smile deepened, if anything, and he nodded to Matt as if to an old acquaintance, then looked at Rand and raised a questioning eyebrow. Rand did not want to know what the question was. He tried to avoid looking at the man, but he knew it was too late for that. Too late. Too late again. Only one thing seemed to shake the velvet-cloaked man's equilibrium. Rand's sword. He had left it on. Two or three men staggered up to ask if he thought his playing was so bad that he needed protection, but none of them had noticed the heron on the hilt. Goad noticed. His pale hands clenched, and he frowned at the sword for a long time before his smile came back. When it did, it was not as sure as before. One good thing, at least, Rand thought. If he believes I can live up to the heron mark, maybe he'll leave us alone. Then all we have to worry about is Hake and his bullies. It was hardly a comforting thought, and sword or no sword, Goad kept watching and smiling. To Rand, the night seemed to last a year. All those eyes looking at him, Hake and Jack and Strom, like vultures watching a sheep caught in a bog, Goad waiting like something even worse. He began to think that everybody in the room was watching with some hidden motive. Sour wine fumes and the stench of dirty, sweating bodies made his head swim, and the din of voices beat at him till his eyes blurred, and even the sound of his own flute scratched at his ears. The crash of the thunder seemed to be inside his skull. Weariness hung on him like an iron weight. Eventually, the need to be up with the dawn began to pull men reluctantly out into the dark. A farmer had only himself to answer to, but merchants were notoriously unfeeling about hangovers when they were paying drivers' wages. In the small hours, the common room slowly emptied as even those who had rooms above stairs staggered off to find their beds. Goad was the last patron. When Rand reached for the leather flute case, yawning, Goad stood up and slung his cloak over his arm. The serving maids were cleaning up, muttering among themselves about the mess of spilled wine and broken crockery. Hake was locking the front door with a big key. Goad cornered Hake for a moment, and Hake called one of the women to show him to a room. The velvet-cloaked man gave Matt and Rand a knowing smile before he disappeared upstairs. Hake was looking at Rand and Matt. Jack and Strom stood at his shoulders. Rand hastily finished hanging his things from his shoulders, holding them all awkwardly behind him with his left hand so he could reach his sword. He made no move toward it, but he wanted to know it was ready. He suppressed a yawn. How tired he was something they should not know. Matt shouldered his bow and his few other belongings awkwardly, but he put his hand under his coat as he watched Hake and his toughs approach. Hake was carrying an oil lamp, and to Rand's surprise, he gave a little bow and gestured to a side door with it. "Your palettes are this way." Only a slight twist of his lips spoiled his act. Matt thrust his chin out at Jack and Strom.
"You need those two to show us our beds?"
"I'm a man of property," Hake said, smoothing the front of his soiled apron, "and men of property can't be too careful." A crash of thunder rattled the windows, and he glanced significantly at the ceiling, then gave them a toothy grin. "You want to see your beds or not?" Rand wondered what would happen if he said they wanted to leave.
"If you really did know more about using a sword than the few exercises Land showed you."
"Lead the way," he said, trying to make his voice hard. "I don't like having anybody behind me."
Strom snickered, but Hake nodded placidly and turned toward the side door, and the two big men swaggered after him. Taking a deep breath, Rand gave a wishful glance at the door to the kitchen. If Hake had already locked the back door, running now would only begin what he was hoping to avoid. He followed the innkeeper glumly. At the side door, he hesitated, and Matt crowded into his back. The reason for Hake's lamp was apparent. The door led into a hall as black as pitch. Only the lamp Hake carried, silhouetting Jack and Strom, gave him the courage to keep on. If they turned, he would know it. And do what? The floor creaked under his boots. The hall ended in a rough, unpainted door. He had not seen if there were any other doors along the way. Hake and his bullies went through, and he followed quickly before they could have a chance to set a trap. But Hake merely lifted the lamp high and gestured at the room. "Here it is." An old storeroom, he had called it, and by the look of it, not used in some time. Weathered barrels and broken crates filled half the floor. Steady drips from more than one place on the ceiling, and a broken pane in the filthy window let the rain blow in freely. Unidentifiable odds and ends littered the shelves, and thick dust covered almost everything. The presence of the promised pallets was a surprise.
"The sword makes him nervous. He won't try anything until we're sound asleep."
Rand had no intention of sleeping under Hake's roof. As soon as the innkeeper left, he intended to be out the window.
"It'll do," he said. He kept his eyes on Hake, wary for a signal to the two grinning men at the innkeeper's side. It was an effort not to wet his lips.
"Leave the lamp."
Hake grunted, but pushed the lamp onto a shelf. He hesitated, looking at them, and Rand was sure he was about to give the word for Jack and Strom to jump them. But his eyes went to Rand's sword with a calculating frown, and he jerked his head at the two big men. Surprise flashed from across their broad faces, but they followed him out of the room without a backward glance. Rand waited for the creak, creak, creak of their footsteps to fade away, then counted to 50 before sticking his head into the hall. The blackness was broken only by a rectangle of light that seemed as distant as the moon, the door to the common room. As he pulled his head in, something big moved in the darkness near the far door. Jack or Strom, standing guard. A quick examination of the door told him all he needed to know, little of it good. The boards were thick and stout, but there was no lock and no bar on the inside. It did open into the room, though.
"I thought they were going for us," Matt said. "What are they waiting for?"
He had the dagger out, gripped in a white-knuckled fist. Lamplight flickered on the blade. His bow and quiver lay forgotten on the floor.
"For us to go to sleep."
Rand started rummaging through the barrels and crates.
"Help me find something to block the door." "Why? You don't really intend to sleep here, do you?"
"Let's get out the window and gone. I'd rather be wet than dead."
"One of them is at the end of the hall. We make any noise, and they'll be down on us before we can blink. I think Hake would rather face us awake than risk letting us get away." Muttering, Matt joined his search, but there was nothing useful in any of the litter on the floor. The barrels were empty, the crates splintered, and the whole lot of them piled in front of the door would not stop anyone from opening it. Then something familiar on a shelf caught Rand's eye. Two splitting wedges, covered with rust and dust. He took them down with a grin. Hastily he shoved them under the door, and, when the next roll of thunder rattled the inn, drove them in with two quick kicks of his heel. The thunder faded, and he held his breath, listening. All he heard was the rain pounding on the roof. No floorboards creaking under running feet.
"The window," he said.
It had not been opened in years, from the dirt crusted around it. They strained together, pushing up with all their might. Rand's knees wobbled before the sash budged. It groaned with each reluctant inch. When the opening was wide enough for them to slip through, he crouched, then stopped.
"Blood and ashes," Matt growled. "No wonder Hake wasn't worried about us slipping out."
Iron bars in an iron frame glistened wetly in the light from the lamp. Rand pushed at them. They were as solid as a boulder.
"I saw something," Matt said.
He pawed hurriedly through the litter on the shelves and came back with a rusty crowbar. He rammed the end of it under the iron frame on one side, and Rand winced.
"Remember the noise, Matt."
Matt grimaced and muttered under his breath, but he waited. Rand put his hands in the crowbar and tried to find good footing in the growing puddle of water under the window. Thunder rolled, and they heaved. With a tortured squeal of nails that made the hairs lift on Rand's neck, the frame shifted. A quarter of an inch, if that. Timing themselves to peals of thunder and lightning cracks, they heaved on the crowbar again and again. Nothing. A quarter of an inch. Nothing. A hair's breadth. Nothing. Nothing. Suddenly Rand's feet slipped in the water and they crashed to the floor. The crowbar clattered against the bars like a gong. He lay in a puddle, holding his breath and listening. Silence but for the rain. Matt nursed bruised knuckles and glared at him.
"We'll never get out at this rate."
The iron frame was pushed out from the window not quite far enough to get two fingers under it. Dozens of thick nails crossed the narrow opening.
"We just have to keep trying," Rand said, getting up.
But as he set the crowbar under the edge of the frame, the door creaked as someone tried to open it. The splitting wedges held it shut. He exchanged a worried look with Matt. Matt pulled the dagger out again. The door gave another creak. Rand took a deep breath and tried to make his voice steady.
"Go away, Hake. We're trying to sleep."
"I fear you mistake me."
The voice was so sleek and full of itself that it named its owner, Howell Goad.
"Master Hake and his minions will not trouble us. They sleep soundly, and in the morning they will only be able to wonder where you vanished to. Let me in, my young friends. We must talk."
"We don't have anything to talk to you about," Matt said. "Go away and let us sleep."
Goad's chuckle was nasty.
"Of course we have things to talk about. You know that as well as I. I saw it in your eyes. I know what you are, perhaps better than you do. I can feel it coming from you in waves. Already you halfway belong to my master. Stop running and accept it. Things will be so much easier for you.
If the Tarvalen hags find you, you'll wish you could cut your own throat before they are done. But you won't be able to. Only my master can protect you from them."
Rand swallowed hard.
"We don't know what you're talking about. Leave us alone."
The floorboards in the hall squeaked. Goad was not alone. How many men could he have brought in two carriages?
"Stop being foolish, my young friends. You know. You know very well. The great Lord of the Dark has mocked you for his own. It is written that when he awakes, the new dreadlords will be there to praise him. You must be two of them, else I would not have been sent to find you. Think of it. Life everlasting and power beyond dreams."
His voice was thick with hunger for that power himself. Rand glanced back at the window just as lightning split the sky, and he almost groaned. The brief flash of light showed men outside, men ignoring the rain that drenched them as they stood watching the window.
"I tire of this," Goad announced. "You will submit to my master, to your master, or you will be made to submit. That would not be pleasant for you. The great Lord of the Dark rules death, and he can give life in death or death in life as he chooses. Open this door! One way or another, your running is at an end. Open it, I say!
He must have said something else, too, for suddenly a heavy body thudded against the door. It shivered, and the wedges slid a fraction of an inch with a grate of rust rubbing off on wood. Again and again the door trembled as bodies hurled themselves at it. Sometimes the wedges held. Sometimes they slid another tiny bit. And bit by tiny bit, the door crept inexorably inward.
Submit, Goad demanded from the hall, or spend eternity wishing that you had.
If we don't have any choice,
Matt licked his lips under Rand's stare. His eyes darted like the eyes of a badger in a trap. His face was pale and he panted as he spoke.
We could say yes, and then get away later. Blood and ashes, Rand, there's no way out.
The words seemed to drift to Rand through wool stuffed in his ears.
No way out.
Thunder muttered overhead and was drowned in a slash of lightning.
Have to find a way out.
Goad called to them, demanding, appealing. The door slid another inch toward being open.
A way out.
Light filled the room, flooding vision. The air roared and burned. Rand felt himself picked up and dashed against the wall. He slid down in a heap, ears ringing and every hair on his body trying to stand on end. Dazed, he staggered to his feet. His knees wobbled and he put a hand against the wall to steady himself. He looked around in amazement. The lamp, lying on its side on the edge of one of the few shelves still clinging to the walls, still burned and gave light. All the barrels and crates, some blackened and smoldering, lay toppled where they had been hurled. The window, bars and all, and most of the wall, too, had vanished, leaving a splintered hole. The roof sagged and tendrils of smoke fought the rain around the jagged edges of the opening. The door hung off its hinges, jammed in the doorframe at an angle slanting into the hall. With a feeling of woozy unreality, he stood the lamp up. It seemed the most important thing in the world was making sure it did not break. A pile of crates suddenly heaved apart and Matt stood up in the middle of it. He weaved on his feet, blinking and fumbling at himself as if wondering if everything was still attached. He peered toward Rand.
Rand? Is that you? You're alive. I thought we were both...
He broke off, biting his lip and shaking. It took Rand a moment to realize he was laughing and on the edge of hysteria.
What happened, Matt? Matt! Matt! What happened?
One last shiver racked Matt, and then he was still.
Lightning, Rand. I was looking right at the window when it hit the bars. Lightning. I can't see worth...
He broke off, squinting at the aslant door, and his voice went sharp.
Where's Goad?
Nothing moved in the dark corridor beyond the door. Of Goad and his companions, there was neither sign nor sound, though anything could have lain in the blackness. Rand found himself hoping they were dead, but he would not have put his head into the hall to find out for sure if he had been offered a crown. Nothing moved out in the night beyond where the wall had been either, but others were up and about. Confused shouts came from above stairs in the inn, and the pounding of running feet.
Let's go all we can, Rand said.
Hastily helping separate their belongings from the rubble, he grabbed Matt's arm and half-pulled, half-guided his friend through the gaping hole into the night. Matt clutched his arm, stumbling beside him with his head pushed forward in an effort to see. As the first rain hit Rand's face, lightning forked above the inn, and he came to a convulsive stop. Goad's men were still there, lying with their feet toward the opening. Pelted by the rain, their open eyes stared at the sky.
"What is it?"
Matt asked.
Blood and ashes. I can hardly see my own bloody hand.
Nothing, Rand said. Look, the light's own. Is it?
Shivering, he carefully guided Matt around the bodies.
Just the lightning.
There was no light save the lightning, and he stumbled in the ruts as they ran staggering away from the inn. With Matt almost hanging on him, every stumble almost pulled them both down. But tottering, panting, they ran. Once he looked back. Once, before the rain thickened to a deafening curtain that blotted the dancing cartman from sight. Lightning silhouetted the figure of a man at the back of the inn, a man shaking his fist at them, or at the sky. Goad or Hake, he did not know, but either one was as bad as the other. The rain came in a deluge, isolating them in a wall of water. He hurried through the night, listening through the roar of the storm for the sound of pursuit.